Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 11 of the Self-Help Podcast. I'm your host Edward Lamb, I've got Sean Orford with me here.
Hello everybody.
How are you doing, Sean?
I'm very good. The thing that makes me laugh is, why is it as soon as we turn the microphone on that both of us laugh? I don't know what that's about.
There's something strange about it, isn't there? And I'm doing this in one go. Usually I have to stop after about 15 seconds
and do it again.
And start over.
Yeah, once. No, it's cool. It's okay. We're allowed to laugh.
Yeah, it's encouraged.
Yeah.
For more information about the work we do, visit our website, liveinthepresent.co.uk. Actually, related to that, just quickly, I've been tweaking with the site, or playing with the site recently as regular viewers and listeners will have seen. I'm playing around with things and I've just put up a new what's called the mindfulness toolkit.
Yes, it's good.
So have you seen it?
Yeah.
You've actually been on the website?
Yeah.
Very good. So when you sign up to be on our email list, you'll get a free ebook, two meditation files, which are fantastic, one for the morning, one for the evening. Yeah. And a few other bits and bobs, as well as regular weekly emails about these podcasts. Eh?
Yeah, brilliant.
Fantastic value for money.
What amazing.
Incredible. we've had a good review this week. Well, we get lots of good reviews. We're on iTunes, I've got to pay a special thanks to Carlitos999, who says, "Thanks for the great podcast. I'm hooked and just ordered the book." That's our kind of listener, hey?
Yeah,
listening,
love it.
And buying the book.
Yeah. Come on down, we want more of those.
Yeah. No, thanks for that. Thank you, Carlitos999. Very good. And yeah, thanks to the world, really, because just this week we hit our 10,000 download record.
Which is brilliant. Thank you for that, everybody. It's great.
Yeah. US and Britain are where most of our listeners are, but we've got like Canada, India, Australia, Brazil, all over. It's amazing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing. Brilliant.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
All right, let's dive into this week. This week's topic is another big one. We're going to be talking about fidelity in the digital age, a.k.a. the porn episode. Da, da, da. So another one we could talk for hours about.
Yes. There'll be no heavy breathing then.
No, I'm going to cram this one into 15-20 minutes again. But let's crack on. But first of all, what's been going on in your world this week, Sean?
I want to talk about balls. I had a discovery this week that I discovered that other people have already discovered, but for me it's amazing, which is, what do you do with the risotto that's left over? And if you know anything about me, I'm a cook. I love cooking.
Risotto. We've got some US listeners. They
okay,
say
risotto. I'll settle for risotto. I love cooking Italian. And I came across the idea of using mozzarella in the rice that's left over, making a nice ball, bread crumbing and deep frying, and really, really loving it and thinking it's great. And then I come around and tell Ed, and I said, "Oh, I ate those last night at the restaurant."
Yeah, they beat you to it. No, yeah, I mean, I'm big on Italian food.
Yeah.
It's probably top of the list for me. Maybe Indian second, maybe. But risotto balls, gorgeous, deep fried.
We'll have a risotto ball fest. I want to know different things that you can put in the middle, you see, rather than cheese.
How big were your balls?
They need to be just slightly smaller than a golf ball, so you can get them in and get the crunch in one bite.
See, now these balls were kind of...
The tennis balls.
Bigger than tennis balls, yeah. They're huge balls.
Yeah. No, I think you need to be able to get them in on one bite and get the crunch in the and the crisp, yeah. We'll experiment.
Nice. I've just got back from a week away. A little family holiday. Retreated down the coast, or along the North Wales coast, to the lovely island of Anglesey.
Innismorne.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of bigger than I thought it would be, actually.
Yeah, it's a big place. Yeah.
So, I mean, UK is a tiny-ish, small island.
Yeah.
Anglesey is an even smaller little island.
Off the top of Wales.
Off the top of Wales. And just a really cool place. Proper little family holiday, you know.
Lovely beaches.
Beautiful. Yeah, amazing beaches. Yeah. I did actually on one day a hike with my father-in-law. Well, a walk, part of the coastal walk, because you can walk the whole island.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about 130 miles.
Yeah.
But we did it one day of it, plus 16 miles. Cool. We hardly saw anyone the whole day, except for when we came across these beaches, and then there'd be people kind of lazing there.
Yeah. Yeah, lovely.
Awesome.
Place. Beautiful.
So, yeah, proper good little family holiday, you know. We had one day of rain. It wouldn't be a hot British holiday without a little bit of rain. But we still had fun.
Yeah.
So back from that and back to work. And back to Wi-Fi and the news. So what's been in the news this week, Sean, that you've been looking at?
I'm interested in brain research, and because we're now scanning brains and neuroscience, there's a bit it's a bit contentious at the moment, but it's a bit in the New Scientist, and we'll put the link up for it. Mm-hmm. But it's about how, when we're scanning brains, that women who have autistic symptoms, they're now feeling that their brains are more male. And mm-hmm. autism is a spectrum. Everyone's on it. You know, we might have Asperger's at one end and the extremes of autism at the other. It's that kind of world. But part of it is about a loss of social sensitivity. That's what happens in Asperger's, and it becomes extreme as you get this huge increase in intellectual intelligence. And the thing that intrigues me is how the women that I work with, who are very, very successful in organisations, how they have masculine characteristics.
Yeah, okay.
And it's almost as though in our society we begin to give those autistic kind of tendencies a lot of value. And in doing that, we lose that wonderful female emotional intelligence.
Okay.
And right. I'm just fascinated by that bit of research and what's going on. But we'll put the link up for it.
Mm. Well, it's not news as such, really, but it's something that's kind of building and growing. And I've been reading more and more about. There's a show on BBC Two on Monday night, Horizon documentary about the rise of the app in being able to track your health, so like things like your heart rate, blood pressure, blood sugar levels, etc., etc. I mean, I know there's been apps around for a while where you can kind of monitor your sleep patterns and stuff like that. You can put your phone under your pillow and it'll monitor how much you've been moving around in the night, and you then get a chart as to how you've slept.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I use things like, I've talked about Lyft app a fair bit for kind of tracking habits and things too, but there's more and more coming in now where you can track every aspect of your health and well-being, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting to the point where I think maybe within, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, your phone or your smartphone it'll be monitoring you 24/7.
You would, when you were telling me about that earlier, you were talking about how the guy in the program could predict that if he didn't do something, he would develop Crohn's disease. I think that's really fascinating.
This guy was pretty, he took it to the extreme.
Yeah.
He actually had a freezer full of his,
droppings.
Droppings. That's the polite word for you.
His feces.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he sent these away every couple of weeks for testing and monitored all these hundreds and hundreds of chemicals in his body, some of which the doctor that was presenting the show hadn't even heard of. But one of these little things flashed up a red light for him, and it predicted, because it was this chemical in his body was 125 times higher than it should have been.
Well,
so, and he could see this red thing in the corner of this huge graph he had on his wall, and it turned out that was kind of an indicator that he was going to get Crohn's disease.
Right.
Which is serious, because I know it's serious because my dad and my brother have had that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I need to get it, kind of keep an eye on that. It's apparently not hereditary. I don't know. Yeah. But I mean, he got it that early on that it was easily an easy fix, you know.
I think that idea that we can begin to monitor what's going on in our systems and be able to predict disease in advance.
That's the deal, because you can get these things early on. At the moment, we wait till we're kind of ill or at death's door before
it's reactive rather than preventative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be a good thing. I mean, there's privacy issues, blah, blah, blah. There are always privacy issues with these guys.
There's also DOSH issues, because things like that cost money.
Yeah.
And it's that problem about those things go to the people that are privileged and have the DOSH, and the people that
probably
need it most.
They pay for it early on, and I'm assuming that the cost will come down over time.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting.
But that biofeedback stuff, I mean, my running thing, which is going well.
Yeah.
I've invested in a Wii Watch thing that I put on.
Cool.
And I've got a chest strap that I put on when I go out, so that I can monitor what I'm doing. I can see where my heart rate's going and see that I'm working at my maximum. Nice. And then how quickly I come back down.
Sorts of cool things you can get. I need to invest in a couple things and do some research maybe, but
yeah,
I'll put some links up and what have you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to our topic of the week, Sean. And the topic this week is fidelity in the digital age. And basically, we're talking about porn and its effects on society, and it's an interesting one because, well, there's basically not too much research into it because no one wants to admit that they're watching it.
Well, no, there is quite a lot of research into it. There is around. I mean, we can put some links up on the site. I mean, it's estimated that something like 70% of men in the Western world access internet porn, but about 30% of women do as well.
Okay.
Not necessarily with the men. And then you that breaks down to different kinds of pornography. Are we looking at gay pornography, or are we looking at heterosexual?
Well, I'll just stop you there because there's a fantastic TEDx talk by a chap called Gary Wilson, which I'll put the link up to, and he talks about all kinds of research, which I'm going to ask you questions about that in this podcast. But one of the interesting things he says is that there was experiments done into kind of the 20 to 35 year old region of males, and they were trying to find men that didn't watch porn because, or to, you know, as a control group. And honestly, well, they couldn't find any. I mean, there must be some out there, but that's pretty staggering, right?
Yeah.
Where to start? You see people in your consulting room day in, day out. What effects is porn having on?
Internet pornography particularly is a growing situation. I mean, apart from the issues of paedophilia, which we'll forget about those for the moment, let's just talk about ordinary pornography.
Yep.
I've had half a dozen cases of these kinds of issues. Each case, it has been the man this year, but that's not necessarily always true. Very often, all the cases I end up dealing with, they've been hidden from the woman, and the woman's found it by using the computer for something and going into history and finding what's going on. And the pornography varies from people who are just watching stills to people that are watching movies to people that are starting to interact with another person in that digital sense. You know, I'm having a digital affair with someone on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And that goes from camera work and things like that through to one case I came across, which you found a lovely word for.
Teledildotronics.
It sounds wonderful.
No, sorry, I got that wrong. Teledildonics.
Teledildonics, okay.
Yeah.
There are people around the planet who are having online relationships, and they over vast distances, as in someone here might be having a relationship with someone in Brazil. And the way that it works is that the woman at her end has a USB connected dildo that she has inserted that the man, maybe many thousands of miles away, can control with his mouse.
Wow.
And at his end, he has an imitation vagina that he puts on that the woman at the other end can control with her mouse. So that we start to have this sexual relationship going on, which is completely remote. Although visually I can see somebody, I can't touch them, they're nowhere there. And yet I'm having this intimate experience, because if there's a dildo inside you, it's like the person's inside you and they are controlling it from the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that do this obviously see it as kind of safe sex and a bit of fun.
Yeah, I think there's a movie. I think it's like Judge Dredd or some horrible, awful late 80s, early 90s sci-fi movie where the main character, I think it might be Sylvester Stallone. Yeah, he has virtual sex with a girl on the other side of the world. And
Rocky having sex with someone.
Yeah, it might not be Judge Dredd. Let me know if I'm wrong on that one. I'll see if I can find a clip on YouTube. But that kind of world's coming true, I guess, isn't it? Coming to the front. And one of the things I'm interested in as a kind of geek and the gadget guy is that the amount of technology, online technology, that's been driven by the porn industry. Okay, so when the internet first came online, initially it was kind of more military technology for sending information. But then people started to realise, obviously, you could use it for a lot of other things. And the porn industry was one of the real early adopters and drove a lot of the... it basically allowed the internet to become what it was, because a lot of people were early on paying for access to pornography.
It's driven the technology.
Yeah, and that was before people were paying for books and CDs and DVDs online, and it's really driven this online world. So that's the positive side of it, because we all rely on the web now, don't we?
Mm.
And it's come from this, but obviously, yeah, pornographic technology is moving on and on, and we've got these virtual worlds where people can live their lives online. Quite literally, you know, they have their own character online and three-dimensional worlds just fly through and what have you.
Mm.
But Where will it end?
Interesting. I have a confession to make in that I am a porn virgin in the sense that I've never seen a blue movie. And that isn't because I'm some kind of prude. I actually did a lot of tantric work back along. And to me, sexuality from that point of view was a good positive thing. I've never seen a blue movie. Maybe I need to go and do that as a bit of research.
Yes.
Sorry, Ree. I'm going to do that. I'm at research. But I really don't... I'm not quite sure, from my point of view, as a man, what it is that you get from watching something in that sense. I mean, I can acknowledge, as having the drives of a young man, I mean, between the ages of kind of 15 and 35, feeling like I had a permanent erection and having that kind of sex drive that was there. And that's what you're saying. You're saying that age range is the age range that is accessing...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah, 100%.
100%.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, and I'm reluctant to talk too much because my mum's listening to this.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, don't ask me any personal questions here, Sean. but, I mean, yeah, okay, so let's go right back to really young guys. We're focusing on guys a bit much here. Maybe let's just say people in general at the age of, that impressionable age of 13, 14. Apparently, this TEDx talk mentions that by the age of 10, most, I think it's about 90% of guys at the age of 10, being called them guys, have been subjected to online pornography. Wow. Or they've sought it out.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
Which is pretty, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there's a million issues in that about, you know, when where does childhood end and when adolescence or adulthood begin, doesn't it?
So is it, well, starting earlier and earlier, would you say? Or
well, over time, if you look at the age of consent, as in when it was legal for people to have sexual interactions, it used to be 21, then it was 18, came down to 16. And there's a big drive in some areas to have it taken down to 13. And that's because there's such high percentages of people that are sexually active at 13. Research varies. In some areas of the world, we're looking at 10% of 13-year-old girls, but in some areas it goes up to 50% of 13-year-old girls are sexually active, which is quite extraordinary in that sense. And the issue has to be, from my point of view, from a psychological point of view, we look at the ideas of what's normal and we look at the ideas of what's moral, ethical, or good. Yeah. There's that kind of stuff. But if the majority of people are sexually active at 13, then the law is hanging behind society. And the adults and the authoritarian people come in and say, but people are too young to do that. But when people were 21, they said they were too young at 18. Yeah. And then when they were 16, they were too young. Now, I don't know where the line is. I suppose in a natural situation, a female of any species would start to mate at the point where she became fertile.
Mm.
And we have young girls or women, really, who become fertile at the age of 9. And we'd see that as outrageous, wouldn't we, if someone was married at the age of 9?
Yeah.
In some countries, girls do get married at the age of 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that is a whole world. If we go back to the internet porn... I want to talk about dopamine.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the work I do with internet porn is to do with addiction. And people get a bit outraged when you start talking about addiction in terms of sexuality. The only famous sex addict who's come out front that I know was Russell Brand, who came out and admitted...
Yeah, he speaks quite candidly about
his addictive issue. What happens is that in the brain, the chemical which gives us the woo factor, makes us feel like, wow, is dopamine. But what happens is that the dopamine controls the frontal lobes of the brain, and the frontal lobes are the bit of us that allows us to make rational decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So we can decide this is good, bad, we shouldn't. But when you get into addictions, whether it's nicotine, alcohol or sex, what happens is the dopamine crashes. And when the dopamine crashes, the ability to stop what you're doing disappears because we lose the rational decision-making part so that people carry on fulfilling the need.
Mm-hmm.
So they want the dopamine, they want the feel-good factor. And that's what people are getting from addiction, and that's what they get from porn addiction. So if we're looking at pornography on the internet as an addictive process, then it is a very real thing. It's not a kind of a pretend thing. It's not, oh, ha, 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 do you know, anybody can stop that. It is an addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't know haven't done the research, but I don't know whether we're looking at these young guys that are accessing as just kind of normal guys that are doing a normal thing. You know, maybe in previous generations, people were legging up drain pipes to look through the windows and see, you know, girls in the bath or something. I don't know. But is that the same thing? Mm. And is that just like a healthy, normal curiosity of what's going on, as opposed to someone who is totally addicted to the process?
Yeah. I mean, what potential side effects or results could there be? I mean, in the talk that Gary Wilson, on the TEDx talk, he mentions things like social anxiety and ADHD, leading on to maybe even depression as well. Are they kind of realistic endpoints for this that kind of addiction?
Yeah, and one of the things that you have to look at is that if you've got someone who is an alcoholic, they hide the bottles. Yeah, someone who shouldn't be taking nicotine will hide the cigarettes. So people don't know what's going on. If somebody is an addict to pornography, I would suspect that what they're doing is hiding it from the people around them. That if they were quite open about it and it was quite clear what they were doing, then they're probably not in addiction. Yeah. If people are trying to hide something, then I suspect we're looking at at least the edge of addiction, if not straight addictive behaviours.
The UK government, in its wisdom, has taken recently in the last few weeks, a strong side on this, and they're trying to hide it from the public at large because they have announced that they're going to be blocking porn from the ISP level, so that people have to, if they want to access internet pornography, have to call up their internet service provider and ask them to unblock it.
Can they do that? Yeah,
they can. I mean, it's a bit hazy and there's been a lot of backlash to it because, basically techie people don't trust the government to do it right, and that certain other things, perhaps things that this filter thinks that are pornographic but maybe aren't, are going to be blocked.
Yeah.
Which I can kind of see that.
Censorship. It's always been a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are books now that we would see, you know, Lady Chatterley's Lover, that we would see as a good literary book at the time were banned.
Yeah.
By the censor. I think that there was a movement a while ago to, you know, the idea of .com or .co.uk was to have .xxx as a definition of certain sites so that people could be very clear about what it was they were accessing.
You can buy that domain.
.xxx.
Yeah, right. That's live now, yeah.
Right, yeah.
I don't know, because I mean, I search for domains for all sorts of obviously, and it's always listed there at the top as like a premium one. I think it's quite expensive, but yeah, you can get those domains now.
Right. Yeah, the idea was that area of the internet would be defined by XXX sites so that people could have a clarity about what they were doing. And you could block those from your kids.
I need to check. There's an option when you upload a podcast to whether it's explicit, you know, if it's swearing, a comedy one or whatever, it's got sexual references. I'm not actually sure whether we're going to have to mark this one as explicit whether that's going to hide it from certain people or not. Just thinking out loud here.
But the interesting thing in that is that everybody that you know, everybody you've ever met, everybody you will meet has a sexual identity, and that will be expressed. Even someone who is celibate and never goes anywhere near sex has a sexual identity, which is expressed in their behaviour. Yeah, right through all kinds of behaviours. One of the things about being a therapist is that you're in that privileged position where people actually share things with you, so that people will talk to me about their sexuality, whereas as a society generally we don't. It's the thing that everybody does that we don't talk about.
Are there any societies in the world that are real open and upfront about sexuality?
Not really, not that I'm aware of. It would be interesting, wouldn't it, if that was there. I mean, I think that certainly in places like Sweden, people seem to be much more kind of rational about sexuality, less reactive about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know of any Western societies that are like that. And many Eastern societies are very not like that. There are some areas of society, like areas of the tantric world and things like that, where sexuality is seen as normal.
Little pockets of it, but...
Yeah. And there are certainly areas in the world where things like orgasms would be seen as normal. And if you weren't having regular orgasms, they'd think there was something odd with you, or you were unwell. It would actually disturb the balance in your system.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from that point of view, a man's body is designed to ejaculate every 2.5 days, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The system is built like that. Obviously, some people do it more, some people do it less. But the system is set up that way.
Yeah. So maybe we just need to be a bit more open about these things, hey?
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit like... And one of the things, yeah, for men and women, I mean, we talk about the male revolution, yeah, that women are so used to having people looking up them and prodding and poking them that for their ability to talk about things is very different.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to men and all kinds of sexual issues and examinations and all that kind of stuff, it all becomes a bit embarrassing.
Okay, so this is obviously something that affects everyone, well, of a certain age group, to either the male or the female side. So, and this is a self-help podcast, so how can people help themselves?
I think that the self-help issue is a big one. Someone actually said to us that this is the self-help podcast, so what's the self-help issue that's going on here? So I need to be clear about that at the end of these episodes we're doing. And self-help in this issue is about, does your sexuality work for you? What's going on?
Yeah.
And I think from that point of view, that maybe this is a call for action to women about what's going on. If we got 70% of men accessing pornography, it'd be really interesting to know what's that like for you. It would be great for you to get in contact and let us know what's going on. I mean, mm-hmm. Ed and I are a couple of fellas here, aren't we? And it would be very interesting to know what women want.
Yeah.
So one of the things for me is that if your sexual relationship isn't working, you need to access some psychosexual therapy. There's loads of people around that would help you. And whether you do that individually or as a couple, very powerful thing, very important.
Mm-hmm.
So self-help is, and if we put some links up so that people can...
Yeah, we'll find some guys stuff. Some, maybe places you can go for some advice.
Yeah, some helplines and things like that. Yeah, but I think that is just so important that we take control of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as I say, where are the women in this?
Mm. Yeah, we need that. We need their voice. So
yeah.
Okay. Well, let's wrap things up and let's wind up this episode, Sean, with a resource of the week.
Okay, my resource of the week is off the wall, in the sense that I've always played music and I've played sitar for many years, and there's a wild company. The Pygmy Guitar Company that have brought out, it looks like a cross between a sitar and a guitar, but it sounds just like a sitar. And if you're a guitarist who would like to make those kinds of sounds, it's the ideal instrument. So I think it's absolutely fabulous. And they're a great bunch of guys there. They make some wild instruments.
They're cool. So, yeah. And they won't mind us talking about them at the end of a pornographic debate.
Well, and perhaps you can play the music whilst other things are going on.
Yeah, okay. Pygmyinstruments.com, though, that's
yeah,
cool.
That's, so, yeah, they're good.
Yeah, I'll have a look at that. And I will talk about an app, because that's the type of thing I like to talk about, and it's called Time Hop. And this is a cool little app, which it requires that you're a fairly active Facebook or Twitterer. That's a word.
Yeah.
But what it does is you log in, you kind of connect your Twitter, Facebook, Instagram accounts, and then it sends you messages from, or your tweets and Facebook statuses from a year previous each day, if you made a post that day a year ago, if you know what I mean. So I logged in this morning, and a year ago today I was on my way back from the Alps in France, having just again unsuccessfully climbed Western Europe's highest mountain.
So are you going to do it again?
Yeah, I've got to give it a bit of time, because it was a bit... Well, some crazy stuff went on there last time. Not involving us, but there was quite a serious incident on the mountain when we were there. And it freaked out my family a little bit, I think. So, and all of my friends too. But still good memories for me there, because we just changed our course of action and we had a lot of fun there anyway. So this morning I was looking back at photos that I'd posted from the trip. And, you know, my emotions when I got back, because it was just that part of the world is incredible.
I guess that app could be a bit of a problem if you're a miserable person and you moan a lot.
Yeah.
It would tell you what you were moaning about.
If you're a Facebooker that kind of moans on there all the time about stuff, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
But if you're a happy...
Can it increase your depression?
But if you're a positive person, as I'm sure all our self-help podcast followers are, it's just going to help, because it reminds you of positive things.
It
enforces all that stuff.
Yeah, I love it.
Cool little bit of technology.
Yeah, yeah.
The people that make it actually call it a time machine. I can see that. Yeah. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant.
Cool. Okie dokie. Well, let's wrap it up. For more information about all the things we've discussed and some links and what have you, visit livingthepresence.co.uk. Search out the page for this individual podcast and you'll find all the links and information. You can also find Sean and I on Twitter and Facebook, blah, 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 all that stuff. Next week, we're going to talk about addiction. What are you addicted to? Because we're all addicted to something, right, Sean?
Yeah. All the addiction means is that we have a normal level of chemistry in our brain, whatever's normal for us. And if we come away from that normality, the system will drive us towards getting it back to normal again, okay. whatever it is that creates that chemistry for us. Mm. And it isn't just things like drugs. There's all kinds of stuff.
It's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, looking forward to that.
Okay, good one.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Ed. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, thanks a lot. Keep it up and keep the support coming and the reviews and, all the love.
Yeah, all the love in the world.
Beautiful. Okay, have a good week.
See ya. Bye.